理课堂听 class.com
Unit 4 Preview. What is success? Some people seem to sail easily through life, overcoming every obstacle they encounter with ease. Then there are those who manage to avoid most difficulties by limiting their experience to what's familiar and easy, and never trying anything new. Are these people successful? Should we all envy them, admire them, imitate them? The authors of the articles in this unit don't think so. The three texts you're going to read take a different approach to success. Text A looks into the psychology of success and comes to the conclusion that one of the most essential ingredients in success is failure. Texts B and C offer some interesting insights into how apparent failures can evolve into success, not only for ourselves, but for others as well.
Text A, Turning Failure into Success by Fredel Maynard. Vicky, beautiful, talented, very bright, voted most likely to succeed in college, got a promising job with a large company after graduation. Then, after 2 years without promotions, she was fired. She suffered a complete nervous breakdown. It was panic, she told me later. Everything had always gone so well for me that I had no experience in coping with rejection. I felt I was a failure. Vicky's reaction is an extreme example of a common phenomenon. Our society places so much emphasis on making it that we assume that any failure is bad. What we don't always recognize is that what looks like failure may, in the long run, prove beneficial. When Vicky was able to think coolly about why she was fired, for example, she realized that she was simply not suited for a job dealing with people all the time. In her new position as a copy editor, she works independently, is happy, and once again, successful. People are generally prone to what language expert S.I. Hayakawa calls the two-valued orientation. We talk about seeing both sides of a question as if every question had only two sides. We assume that everyone is either a success or a failure, when in fact infinite degrees of both are possible. As Hayakawa points out, there's a world of difference between I have failed three times and I am a failure. Indeed, the words failure and success cannot be reasonably applied to a complex, living, changing human being. They can only describe the situation at a particular time and place. Obviously, no one can be brilliant at everything. In fact, success in one area often precludes success in another. A famous politician once told me that his career had practically destroyed his marriage. I have no time for my family, he explained. I travel a lot, and even when I'm home, I hardly see my wife and kids. I've got power, money, prestige, but as a husband and father, I'm a flop. Certain kinds of success can indeed be destructive. The danger of too early success is particularly acute. I recall from my childhood a girl whose skill on ice skates marked her as Olympic material. While the rest of us were playing, bicycling, reading, and just loafing, this girl skated every day after school and all weekend. Her picture often appeared in the papers, and the rest of us envied her glamorous life. Years later, however, she spoke bitterly of those early triumphs. I never prepared myself for anything but the ice, she said. I peaked at 17, and it's been downhill ever since. Success that comes too easily is also damaging. The child who wins a prize for a carelessly written essay, the adult who distinguishes himself at a first job by lucky accident, faces probable disappointment when real challenges arise. Success is also bad when it's achieved at the cost of the total quality of an experience. Successful students sometimes become so obsessed with grades that they never enjoy their school years. They never branch out into tempting new areas because they don't want to risk their grade point average. Why are so many people so afraid of failure? Simply because no one tells us how to fail, so that failure becomes a growing experience. We forget that failure is part of the human condition and that every person has the right to fail. Most parents work hard at either preventing failure or shielding their children from the knowledge that they have failed. One way is to lower standards. A mother describes her child's hastily made table as perfect, even though it's clumsy and unsteady. Another way is to shift blame. If John fails math, his teacher is unfair or stupid. The trouble with failure prevention devices is that they leave a child unequipped for life in the real world. The young need to learn that no one can be best at everything, no one can win all the time, and that it's possible to enjoy a game even when you don't win. A child who is not invited to a birthday party, who doesn't make the honor roll or the baseball team, feels terrible, of course. But parents should not offer a quick consolation prize or say it doesn't matter, because it does. The youngster should be allowed to experience disappointment and then be helped to master it. Failure is never pleasant. It hurts adults and children alike, but it can make a positive contribution to your life once you learn to use it. Step one is to ask, "Why did I fail?" Resist the natural impulse to blame someone else. Ask yourself what you did wrong, how you can improve. If someone else can help, don't be shy about inquiring. When I was a teenager and failed to get a job I'd counted on, I telephoned the interviewer to ask why. "Because you came 10 minutes late," I was told. "We can't afford employees who waste other people's time." The explanation was reassuring. I hadn't been rejected as a person, and helpful too. I don't think I've been late for anything since. Success, which encourages repetition of old behavior, is not nearly as good a teacher as failure. You can learn from a disastrous party how to give a good one, from an ill-chosen first house what to look for in a second. Even a failure that seems total can prompt fresh thinking, a change of direction. A friend of mine, after 12 years of studying ballet, did not succeed in becoming a dancer. She was turned down by the ballet master, who said, "You will never be a dancer. You haven't the body for it." In such cases, the way to use failure is to take stock courageously, asking, "What have I left? What else can I do?" My friend put away her toe shoes and moved into dance therapy, a field where she's both competent and useful. Though we may envy the assurance that comes with success, most of us are attracted by courage in defeat. There is what might be called the noble failure, the special heroism of aiming high, doing your best, when that proves not enough, moving bravely on. As Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "A man's success is made up of failures, because he experiments and ventures every day, and the more falls he gets, moves faster on. I have heard that in horsemanship, a man will never be a good rider until he is thrown. Then he will not be haunted any longer by the terror that he shall tumble, and will ride whither he is bound."
New words. Vote.
Promising.
Promotion.
Breakdown.
Nervous breakdown.
Rejection.
Reaction.
Extreme.
Emphasis.
Beneficial.
Editor.
Editorial.
Edit.
Edition.
Prone.
Apply.
Complex.
Preclude.
Practically.
Prestige.
Flop.
Destructive.
Acute.
Loaf.
Glamorous.
Glamour.
Peak.
Downhill.
Damage.
Distinguish.
Probable.
Obsess.
Grade point average, GPA.
Shield.
Hastily.
Haste.
Device.
Unequipped.
Honor roll.
Consolation.
Consolation prize.
Alike.
Impulse.
Inquire.
Inquiry.
Afford.
Repetition.
Ill chosen.
Ill.
Prompt.
Ballet.
Stock.
Courageously.
Toe.
Toe shoe.
Therapy.
Heroism.
Horsemanship.
Haunt.
Terror.
Tumble.
Wither.
Bound. Text B. Failure? No, just temporary setbacks. By Dottie Walters. If you could come to my office in California to visit with me today, you would see that one side of the room is occupied by a beautiful old-fashioned soda fountain with 9 leather-covered seats. Unusual? Yes. But if that soda fountain could speak, it would tell you a story about the day I almost lost hope and gave up. It was a recession period after World War II, and jobs were scarce. My husband had purchased a small dry cleaning business with borrowed money. We had 2 darling babies, a tract house, a car, and all the usual monthly payments. Then the bottom fell out. There was no money for the house payments or anything else. I felt that I had no special talent, no training, no college education. I didn't think much of myself, but I remembered someone in my past who had thought I had a little ability. My high school English teacher. She had inspired me to take a course in journalism and named me advertising manager and feature editor of the school paper. I thought, now if I could write a shopper's column for the small weekly newspaper in our rural town, maybe I could earn that house payment. I had no car and no one to look after my 2 children, so I took them with me to the newspaper office, pushing them before me in an old broken-down baby stroller with a big pillow tied in the back. The wheel kept coming off, but I hit it back on with the heel of my shoe and kept going. I was determined that my children would not lose their home, as I often had as a child. But at the newspaper office, there were no jobs available. Recession. So I got an idea. I asked if I might buy advertising space at wholesale and sell it at retail as a shopper's column. They agreed. The newspaper column idea worked. I made enough money for the house payment and to buy an old used car. Then I hired a high school girl to look after my children from 3 to 5 each afternoon. When the clock struck 3, I grabbed my advertising samples and flew out the door to drive to my appointments. But on one dark, rainy afternoon, every advertising prospect I had worked on turned me down when I went to pick up their ads. Why? I asked. They said they had noticed that Reuben Allman, the president of the Chamber of Commerce and the owner of a big drugstore, didn't advertise with me. His store was the most popular in town. They respected his judgment. There must be something wrong with your advertising, they explained. My heart sank. Those 4 ads would have been enough for the monthly house payment. Then, I thought, I'll try to speak with Mr. Allman one more time. Everyone loves and respects him. Surely he'll listen. Every time I tried to approach him in the past, he had refused to see me. But I knew that if he advertised with me, the other merchants in town would follow his lead. As I walked into Mr. Allman's drugstore, he was there at the prescription counter. I smiled my best smile and said, "Everyone respects your opinion, Mr. Allman. Would you just look at my work for a moment so that I can tell the other merchants what you think?" Without saying a word, he firmly shook his head, "No." Suddenly, all of my enthusiasm left me. I made it as far as the beautiful old soda fountain at the front of the drugstore, feeling that I didn't have the strength to drive home. I didn't want to sit at the soda fountain without buying something, so I ordered a Coke. I wondered desperately what to do. Would my babies lose their home, as I had so many times when I was growing up? Was my English teacher wrong? My eyes filled with tears. A soft voice beside me said, "What's the matter, dear?" I looked up into the sympathetic face of a lovely gray-haired lady. I poured out my story to her, ending it with, "But Mr. Allman, who everyone respects so much, refuses to look at my work." "Let me see that shopper's column," she said. She took my marked issue of the newspaper in her hands and carefully read my column all the way through. Then she stood up, looked back at the prescription counter, and in a commanding voice said, "Reuben Allman, come here." The lady was Mrs. Allman. She told Reuben to buy some advertising from me. His mouth turned up in a big grin. Then she asked me for the names of the four merchants who had turned me down. She went to the phone and called each one. She gave me a hug and told me they were waiting for me. Reuben and Vivian Allman became our dear friends, as well as steady advertising customers. I learned that Reuben was a darling man who bought from everyone. He had promised Vivian not to buy any more advertising, and in turning me down, he was just trying to keep his word to her. If I had only asked others in town, I might have learned that I should have been talking to Mrs. Allman from the beginning. That conversation at the soda fountain was the turning point. My advertising business thrived and grew into four offices with 285 employees serving 4,000 businesses. Later, when Mr. Allman modernized the old drugstore and removed the soda fountain, my husband bought it and installed it in my office. If you were here, we'd sit at the soda fountain together. I'd pour you a Coke and remind you to never give up, to remember that help is always closer than we know. Then I would tell you that if you can't communicate with a key person, search for more information. Try another path. Look for someone who can communicate for you. And finally, I would offer you the sparkling, refreshing words of Bill Marriott of the Marriott Hotels. Failure? I've never encountered it. All I ever met were temporary setbacks.
New words. Setback.
Occupy.
Soda.
Soda fountain.
Leather.
Recession.
Darling.
Tract.
Tract house.
Monthly payment.
Journalism.
Advertising.
Advertise.
Feature.
Column.
Did you come across traffic during our trip?
Of course not. I slowed down at the light, looked carefully.
Heel.
Wholesale.
Retail.
Grab.
Appointment.
Appoint.
Chamber.
Commerce.
Drugstore.
Judgment.
Merchant.
Prescription.
Prescribe.
Enthusiasm.
Desperately.
Desperate.
Sympathetic.
Gray-haired.
Grin.
Hug.
Modernize.
Install.
Installment.
Remind.
Sparkling.
Refreshing.
Encounter.